the amount of water which is present in the tissue between the brain and the phone, because that effectively acts as a screen. So there's no absolute conclusion about whether more or less would be absorbed in the brain from a phone in a child or an adult, except to say that what we do know is with the power of modern phones that there's virtually no energy get as far as most of the brain, if any of the brain, because it's normally screened out before it gets that far. There's a lot of work being done in that area, and it's a lot of it's pretty accurate too. In terms of studying this, there is another really important study which is just in the process of getting going now, called Mobi Kids, which takes a similar approach to interphone and is going to study that very issue, children using mobile phones. In terms of other sources, of course, it's important to remember that children use mobile phones a lot in their hands, texting, and whilst the amount of energy from texting is pretty minimal, there is still exposure to the hand as well, and that shouldn't be disregarded. Wireless networks are very low level. They're a lot lower than certainly the second generation of mobile phones, although the third generation of mobile phones are getting down near there when we start looking at the levels from networks which only transmit in third generation. They really are very low indeed. So one of the things which is changing rapidly in this industry is that lower and lower levels are being used to in the systems, but at the same time there are more and more uses of them. So there's no great concern at the moment about those issues, but it is a live issue, and certainly the Mobi Kids study is the most important initiative there.
Could you spell Mobi Kit for me?
It's Mobi hyphen Kids.
Gotcha.
Alistair, did you want to respond on the Mobi Kids at all?
Thank you. Yes, as David said, that there is an international collaborative study looking at the question of disease risk, if there is one, in children associated with mobile phone use. It involves, a large number of countries, and New Zealand is part of the team. We haven't begun the study here in New Zealand, but we are intending to seek funds to get that underway later in the year.
Thank you.
Other questions? Could you please, if you have one, introduce yourself and your organisation?
Hi there, it's Kate Newton calling from the Dominion Post. I just have one question. David, you've sort of spoken to this, but Neil and Alistair, if you'd like to respond. What do you feel that we need to do next research-wise? I mean, given that Mobi Kids is already going, but I mean, what else perhaps needs to be done?
Neil, did you want to respond first to that?
I was hoping you would respond first.
well, my thought is that we need to have information on the effects, if there are effects, of longer-term use. You know, Neil mentioned that necessarily the interphone study was restricted really to people who had used mobile phones for 10, 11, 12 years, not much longer. So we need longer-term follow-up, and ideally we need better information on how much people have used phones rather than relying entirely on people's recall. So studies of that kind are now underway in Europe. There's a big cohort study called the COSMOS study that is aiming to plug those gaps, which has recently got underway. So basically what do we need? We need information on more wider age range, and that's why Mobi Kids is important. We need longer term follow-up, and we need better and more accurate, reliable information on how much cell phone use people have been exposed to.
Thanks.
Hi, Neil here. Basically, I agree with what Alistair's said, and I can't add much to that. I was just checking the paper to see what we said about what further research could be done. Obviously, in addition to specific studies, which is the main thing to do, it's useful to monitor cancer incidence rates, particularly for these types of for brain tumours, and to see if there are any changes over time. That's a very blunt instrument. It's much better to do detailed studies of the type that we've done. But it can still be reassuring or give us a bit of a warning signal if incidence seems to be increasing. But the main thing, as Alistair said, is to do studies with longer follow-up and better exposure data.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, David here. I will just add one thing that what I'm particularly interested in is carrying on discussion and thinking about where RF exposure is coming from. For example, is being on a lower power device for 2 hours the same as being on a much higher power device for 5 minutes? We really don't know that, and that's a very important issue to discuss. And we also need to look at the impact of the change in technology to networks such, for example, in New Zealand as Telecom's XT network, which is a 3G-only network, which would be expected to have much lower amounts of absorption than the older networks, and all the networks will be like that quite soon. And, of course, there's the issue of cordless phones, which are very widespread use and may well contribute much more than we think to RF exposure.
Hi, this is Jackson Wood from the Green Party's Media and Research Unit. I just had a question for y'all. Given that there are links, the links that you've shown are for high end users, what about people living near cell phone towers? What does this research indicate for those people? Anyone?
David, would you like to comment on the relative strength of exposure for phone users and people living in the vicinity of towers?
Yes, I'd be happy to. The whole issue of mobile phone or other portable device use held next to the body is that there is a direct coupling effect, and as I said, the specific absorption rate of standard of, say, 2 watts per kilogram is actually approached in that some second generation mobile phones may be half up to half of that, and third generation phones may typically be a tenth or 20th or something like that of it. The field strengths from a mobile phone transmitter when you are even below it is way under that. We're talking typically exposures of thousandths or at the most hundredths of the standard, and usually in most communities much less than that. So the factor of if we look at the amount of energy which could be absorbed, particularly in the brain, from the field strengths that are found even quite close to mobile phone sites, it is absolutely minuscule, and in fact it only competes with other sources in the environment, such as sources from radio and television transmitters, which in many communities is higher than mobile phones. So this study, the interface study, it really doesn't tell us anything about environmental levels, except that if the only finding from it is that we're only going to focus on high levels and long-term use, they are not found at all in the environment around mobile phone base stations.
Thank you.
Neil,
go ahead.
Would you like to comment a little bit further, David? Because the cell phone towers, I know, are way below the standard, but of course cell phones themselves are too. How does living beneath a cell phone tower compare to actually using a cell phone? Presumably, using a cell phone is still a much higher dose because you're holding it right against your head.
Yeah, so using a second generation mobile phone can get up to half of the basic restriction, so that's about 1 watt per kilogram. Using a 3G phone would be, usually a tenth of that. Typically, the highest levels you'd ever find, even living right next to a mobile phone site, would be a hundredth or less. So there's two orders of magnitude at least, and usually three or four orders of magnitude difference. So it's a big difference.
Okay. Are there other questions from our journalists who've dialed in?
It's Jackson again. I have another question. You said that a precautionary approach to the radiation emitted by cell phones was too much. But what about putting cautionary warnings at no cost to anyone but phone manufacturers onto cordless phones and on cellular phones, saying that they may or may not till we get the research done?
That's a good one. I think Alistair might.
I agree with you, David. I think you made the point that we want to make sure that people are well informed, and any approach that does provide good information to people, I would support. I suppose the challenge would be exactly what would you say in terms of product labelling. So in principle, I like the idea. I think the challenge would be to come up with a message that was accurate and understandable and helpful that would fit on a mobile phone.
Yeah. The situation at the moment is that there are, that on mobile phones, most manufacturers do include SAR figures, which is the maximum absorption from them, and all of the instruction manuals do contain a statement about the fact that it is a radio frequency transmitting device, and some go a bit further than that. So the users are aware of what they're using. I think there's a great deal of very good and well-written information available, for example, on the internet, on websites of the National Radiation Laboratory, the World Health Organization. So I think the information is out there and not at all hard to find. The difficulty I would have with actually putting a label on a phone is that I think you'd also have to put it on quite a lot of common foods, for example, smoked meat, for which there is at least equivalent evidence of carcinogenesis, probably more than there is from mobile phones. So where do you stop?
Ken Harkinson here from NZP. I just wanted to clarify a small detail. I may have missed some of the pages on the documents that came up on my computer screen, but can you just briefly characterise the heaviest users in terms of numbers of hours of use or in some other way over the 10 years? How do you define
the
heaviest users?
Yeah, it's Alistair Woodward here. That's an interesting point, because if you look at those people in the heaviest 10% of use in terms of the amount of time they spent on phones and assume that their reports were accurate and that they were evenly spread, their use was evenly spread, we're talking about people who were using phones on average for half an hour a day,
mm-hmm.
half an hour a day or more. Now, in 10 years ago, that constituted extremely heavy use.
Yeah.
Of course, it's not that any longer because of changes in the technology and a reduction in the cost.
Okay. Are you seeing in future studies that there'll have to be some calculation of the variation in risk allowing for lower emissions from the more modern technology and the extended use of these phones because they are now much cheaper than they used to be?
yes, you're right. The technology's changed and the way it's used has changed so that people have now texting, whereas they weren't 10 years ago. It is worth noting that we put a lot of effort into trying to work out what kinds of phones people were using. And at that time, there were people using a mixture of the old analog phones along with the new digital phones, which, of course, are now the standard. And typically, the analog phones operated at much higher levels, power levels, and we noticed no difference in risk between analog users and digital users. So that's another bit of information that I think tends to come down on the reassuring side.
You cited the... I'm sorry, can I just want to finish off on that? You cited the raw data, obviously. Were there any significant variations in the way that New Zealand featured compared with other countries in the study?
Well, New Zealand... the New Zealand contribution was relatively small. We had about 300 participants out of the 10,000 or so who contributed to the study altogether. But our findings were almost exactly the same in every important respect to those that were reported in the pooled results.
Thank you.
Right. I'd like to see if there's a question from someone who has not had a chance to ask yet.
Oh, hi, yeah. Question from Amanda Cameron, New Zealand doctor. Question for David Black. David, what would you advise GPs to tell patients who are worried about cell phone use and what they should be doing now?
Sorry, is that annoying?
Well, I can. The famous as I would advise people, which is, I don't think there is any cause for concern at this stage. I think that using mobile phones is safer than most things, you know, many things that we do. And I don't. To me, we have to separate the need for continuing to look for an elusive problem in the knowledge that, you know, we haven't found one, and we have to just carry on as we are. One of the things that is happening, of course, is that the technology is reducing doses anyway, but even without that, as Alistair said, we don't have any reason to believe when the technology had much higher doses that there was a problem. One really important thing about all this research is that you have to ask the question, why did anybody ever think that mobile phones would cause brain cancer in the first place? There wasn't really, there wasn't a problem. I mean, there wasn't an apparent problem. Much research is done because there's a problem and you want to find out what causes it. That is not the case with this. The issue is that here is technology which is being used in a huge way and it's very important to know everything about it. So my answer is I reassure patients that they should carry on using the technology as they wish and any risk to them is minimal, if at all.
Thank you.
Okay. Time for one final question.